Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Hjärtats rum Järvsö with me Ida Winterhaven. This is a special episode, one of those that I'm hosting this winter, and I have a very special guest with me today, Ariana Storasi-Masucci, one of the great pioneers in the field of equine guided education. Ariana, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ida. It's great to be here with you.
Why don't you just introduce yourself to the audience here? Share a little bit about yourself and your work. And
well, let's see. I'm from originally from California in the United States. Grew up along the coastline, so the estuaries and beaches, a water person. I grew up on the back of a horse, really by myself, just me and my horse riding the hills and being in nature. So really nature and the wild animals have always been my friends and my teachers. And I studied, I got a degree in zoology at UC Davis. Mm-hmm. And I was a pre-med and pre-vet. And I worked with raptors, which are birds of prey, like hawks, eagles, and owls. And I also worked in what was called the non-domestic ward at the veterinary hospital, which was all kinds of wild animals, the birds, bobcats, alligators, snakes, turtles, animals that can kill you and all those things. And so I learned from a young age being in nature and with horses. And then as I was working with these other wild animals, that they could really see into you. And I needed to know myself very well inside and out in order to be safe with them. And like I said, they've always sort of been my teachers. And, somehow in my early 20s, I became a single mother and I felt like I needed to get my career going. And so I joined some business professional women groups and had my own businesses and started taking leadership, and I started seeing that leadership is really about a way of being and your presence. And I kept referring back to my experiences with the horses and the animals. And I thought, well, who better to tell you when you're being present and centered than a horse, because they're just so honest and frank about that. So that started a journey, of over 30 years now of bringing the wisdom of horses and their instinct and their way of being into how we can become more present in ourselves. And yeah. I'm a big, proponent, as you know, of how powerful being in nature is, not only to come home into ourselves, but to be able to heal things that have broken in ourselves. And so that's one of my big passions in the world.
I think that's so beautiful when we think about the healing powers that are available to all of us if we just allow them to come to us. How did you discover the healing powers of nature and animals?
Well, I think from the time I was little, I always just felt more at home in nature and around water and with animals. I actually had a cat in my crib, which is, I guess you're not supposed to do that, but I had a cat that slept with me. And my father joked recently, kind of jokingly, like why I have such a thing with animals, and being outside in nature, is that when I was born, they put my cradle or my crib on the back porch in San Francisco, and it was enclosed so that I wouldn't get stolen or anything, but I was outside with my cat to get warm. And that's my life. And so it took me a long time to recognize it, but I think I'm very sort of dyslexic. I don't really track in the language of words well. Mm-hmm. And so from a young age, I was very sensitive to energy, and in nature and animals are, they're there, they're present. They, in a sense, they tell you the truth. Sometimes with people, I felt like they were saying one thing with their mouths and something else with their energy. And that was very confusing for me. So I grew up feeling more trusting in nature than I did with people. And, you know, when I became a single mother and my daughter was so free in her own spirit, and I realized that I had kind of gotten rusty with people, and she was just very naturally social. And I had a sense that I knew that I needed to figure out a way to come back into the world of people. And I didn't know what, I didn't have clear sight of what my destiny was, but I had a sense that I had a destiny, that I had to come back into the world of people to try to understand them. And so I made a promise to myself to come back into the world of people with the ways I was new and familiar with and communicating with animals. And so that, and I figured that if it didn't work out, I could always go back to the world of, you know, the natural world and have my safe home there. But I've been on that journey ever since. So my, you know, the last 3 years have been really me trying to learn how to articulate what it nature can provide and what animals can provide. And, you know, I remember being in my biology and animal behavior classes in college, and the professors, most of them men at the time, but they would tell us, like, animals don't have feelings. They don't feel joy. They don't feel pleasure. Like, what about otters playing? They're not feeling, we're laughing and we're joying with them, but they're not feeling anything. And I just thought that was just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I would debate with my professors to the point of tears, you know, kind of like, this can't be so. So for, I think in the 1990s, I really cloaked what I saw and what I wanted to offer to people in the guise of leadership, because people could understand that. And then as we started hitting, you know, the 2000s and the, you know, just the way the world started to change, and we started to hit this sort of, you know, what we now call like that paradigm shift, that we have to change the way that we perceive, not just ourselves, but our world and our systems and our patterns. And we have to learn new ways of not just being with others, but in new forms of respect, right? To being respectful of not just other people and respectful to the earth, but also respectful to ourselves. And so it crosses all domains. And I just see that when we can, you and I have gone through some of these things together where it doesn't even mean that a person has to go physically into nature, but that if we bring the time in nature, the experiences we've had, or the metaphors of nature, or being with an animal in a way that soothes our soul or our spirit, that we can bring that to us intentionally and create a shift in our consciousness.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like to think that there's so many lessons in nature. So one simple one is that, one, nature likes diversity. She doesn't want everybody to be the same, you know, and that's such a clear message when we're going through our self-development process of individuating and allowing ourselves to be uniquely who we are, as opposed to, you know, fitting into the shoulds and the coulds and the expectations that we either inherited or we put onto ourselves. And so in the work that I do, when I'm doing equine guided work, or, you know, just any kind of healing work with somebody, is I start in the beginning of being really curious about who they are as their original self, their spirit self. And when they come to work with me in equine guide education, I feel like their original self, their spirit self, is saying, "Hey, I need you. I need your attention. I need you to listen to me. We're a little off track, and how do we come back on track?" You know, which leads down this path of being, how do I set myself free to be utterly, uniquely who I am supposed to be and the unique contribution I'm supposed to make into the world.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. And there's just layers and layers to that.
How do you, to someone who is very new to this kind of, these kind of experiences, could you elaborate a little bit about how animals and perhaps horses can enhance the experience or make it easier? Or,
well, it's interesting because I think everybody likes animals, but I have learned that not everybody likes animals. So when I was a teenager, I worked at the San Francisco Zoo. And my job was at that, I had lots of jobs, but one was I had a bunch of baby chicks. And the opportunity was for little children to be able to hold the baby chicks. But they, you know, they could only be in the temperature so long. And so I had to make sure that the baby chicks stayed okay. And I thought everybody, all children would love to be able to hold a baby chick. But reality was that some children were scared of the little fluffy yellow baby chicks. And I was really sort of surprised, but then curious, like, why, where did that come from? And was that being created by the parents? And so, I mean, I'm just going to set a premise with that. And then even some of the youth that I work with, like their parents have taught them that dirt is dirty. And I was taught that dirt is, you know, it's, I mean, my daughter used to put pebbles in her mouth, you know, because, I mean, she's probably getting, you know, being part. So all that, again, like I said, pressing. But one of the things I'll shortcut really fast, and this is actually something that anybody can try, is if you're feeling stressed out and you're troubled, or you're in a negative mood, if you go outside and you take a walk, and some people may have to drive to go there, but if you get somewhere where there's a field or there's a tree or trees, a forest, water, and take a walk and look into the environment and notice the colors, the smells, the shapes, and then try to go back and remember if you're still sad or if you're still stressed. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You can't stay that way. And I'm not the only one that figured that out. I mean, in Japan, they have forest bathing institutes now where they've done research to show that people's heart rate will calm down and the cortisol rate goes down. And, you know, I love, I know David White, the famous poet. And when he was younger, he was a marine biologist and he was in the Galapagos by himself. And one of the things he also discovered was it was really hard to be sad in nature for very long, because something would happen. The birds would sing or the seals would start playing, and pretty soon he's enjoying nature. So that's something. And even, like I said, I've been doing some sort of experiments for, especially during COVID times when some people couldn't really go out to nature in the way that I can, because I'm very blessed to be able to be out in nature. To be able to do a meditation where you bring nature in to you, by like being in the, you know, remembering of time being in that, maybe for some power places forest and for others it's the sea or water. And the other thing about nature is, the other thing is, like, when you get a bunch of kids, when kids will come to our ranch or whatever, and some of them are from the city, and at first they just can't settle down and they're sort of like, I'm bored, what's next? And I just tell the parents, just forget, leave them alone. And pretty soon they're off into nature and they're playing with sticks and twigs and rocks and making things, and they're being creative. Like, you know, to me, like, I do live close to the ocean, and I'm always amazed how being on the shore, how the beach just absorbs people, and just how I've never seen a kid being morose and sad at the beach. You know, with sand and, you know, anyway, so, and I think animals too, and we've had this burgeoning, in the last, whatever, 20 plus years of animals being our, not just our pets, but sort of our families, right? And the whole pet industry, at least the United States, is just insane. But there is something about, whether it's a cat or a dog or a rabbit, that is just calming, because they live in, they don't live in an anxious state unless they're caged up.
I used to think sometimes about my great grandmother. Her name was Ida also, and she lived in, perhaps my English lack here, but like a big barn, where one part was for the family and the other part was for the animals. And there wasn't a whole wall between. It was just sort of a half wall. So you had a family and a stove and a fireplace on one side, and then you had the cows and perhaps a goat or some sheep on the other side. And I'm thinking about growing up, her children grew up in that house until, you know, they got older and times got better and they could build another small house outside of the barn. And then the entire family moved out of this place. And having had that connection and then being off that connection, I find it very fearful to think about that.
Now would be my favorite place to live.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. But being disconnected then, I mean, if I'm thinking perhaps when you had that cat in your crib when you were little, was there a time where you realized you couldn't have the cat with you always?
Yeah, right. There's just something really powerful about that. And, you know, if you think about it, it's really just 100 years, maybe 120 years since we've had electricity to, I mean, before then we, our houses were small mostly and functional to heat, you know, to heat or to cool. And we carried our water, not just for ourselves, but for our animals. So every bucket of water was something that we, you know, may have been hauling. And also we were just around horses. So whether we had a horse, whether the horse was our transportation, whether the horse was our agricultural labor or a service team in warfare or protection. And so all people had, were, and because we were so close to nature, our bodies were being perturbed by nature all the time. So I think we had a sort of kind of common sense that in many ways can be getting taught out of us now, where if we're on the, if we're in cities with the, not just the concrete, but the electricity and this desensitization. And so our nervous systems aren't being perturbed naturally in a three-dimensional sort of 360 degree way. And so we become more brittle.
That's really beautiful. And I think that that's what's happening to a lot of us when we live in big cities, that we get this disconnection and all of a sudden we don't have the strength that we could have inside. That the strength that actually comes from the connection with another animal. And could you give us an understanding of if you are like I was 5 or 10 years ago, I had completely forgotten about what this connection felt like. Mm-hmm. And I had to experience it myself to really, you know, understand it again. But if you would try to explain what it's like when you find the connection again.
Well, what would you say?
Yeah, that's, it's like night and day, right? It's like living your life completely differently.
Yeah, I feel like maybe there was a period when, as my business grew, maybe I was more in the office and less, because I used to be, you know, professional horse trainer and riding straight. So I was outside all the time. And then so I was writing a book and I was, you know, building my business. And so I was spending more time inside and I was definitely getting more stressed out. And my patience went down and negative thoughts, you know, more self, self-judgment would come in. And I knew already that I needed to go outside to change that. I just knew that. I think I just always knew that innately because that always was, it was a bodily experience. So if I would go out to the barn to be with horses, all of that would just fall away and I would be refreshed in a different way. And so I think it just has to also be, especially for these times. And I think you and I just had a recent conversation about that in terms of in these stressful times, like that we have how and where can we, and maybe sometimes must we be consciously choosing how to calm ourselves down, how to stay present in all the stressors in our lives right now. I mean, there's just, it's just everywhere we go, everywhere we turn. COVID certainly turned many, I mean, even the most resilient of us into sometimes brittle nerve endings and the climate and just a lot. I mean, everywhere you turn, I don't know anybody who's just living in a perfectly harmonious state at the moment. And I think, you know, Mother Nature is, she's not sentimental. And she can be quite merciless. And she really is like, I feel like saying, hey, wake up. What's the life you want to live? And how do you want to live that life? And what maybe being, you know, in the past, we've created these grand expectations of ourselves to make contributions of great service. But maybe contribution now is really just the ability to be able to be present enough to offer kindness.
Yeah.
And gentleness.
Do you think, because I know that you work a lot with leaders from all kinds of businesses and people who have in their roles a big impact on both the businesses itself, but also on the people working with them. If you would give advice to a leader now, what's the road to take now going forward in your leadership, to improve your leadership for the sake of the planet?
Yeah, I think now leadership, as I say, is of a spiritual nature in the sense, not religious. I don't mean religion, but what I mean in that is that as a leader, that it's more imperative now than ever to connect what we're leading, what we're creating in the world, to saving the planet. That, you know, our actions have to be more, we have to be more diligent. Like, what's my footprint on the earth? Do I need all this packaging? Can I do without this packaging? For the sake of what am I leading this thing and creating the products and the things I'm creating, and how can I be an innovator and a leader really of the change to be in dramatically more sustainable practices, both on physical products that we produce and use to create the businesses that we do, and to challenge everything of what we used to deem as success. To me, success may not be anymore about how much money you make or how much, you know, things that you have, but it's really the lives you're changing. And it's not, the other thing for me is it's not just changing people's lives anymore. Because here's the thing that I really got during COVID was that we talk about healing people and we're healing people or we're helping them, you know, get true to who they are and what they care about. But if we don't do that in a connected way with the earth and nature, we're just sending, we're healing people and sending them right back into a sick world. So especially for those of us that are healers, and any leader, is how do we incorporate a reciprocal respect and care of the earth into everything that we do? And we can't solve every problem by ourselves, but we each have one thing that we can do and that we can do differently. And so I, you know, a couple of years ago, I was going to do sort of a kind of a membership thing, but I just don't have the good internet. But it was things like to be able to take, like, not to, to see, I feel like if we go, oh, poor earth, you know, the poor earth, and then we're putting in this sort of poor energy into it. But we have to see this as a possibility that we can change. And just actually another thing, COVID was when we all went home and we didn't drive our cars and fly in planes, like the pollution went down by 30% in a month. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. So what if, I mean, what about the crazy idea if, like, as a whole world for 1 month a year, we just don't drive in our cars and we don't fly in planes. Like, we could all just agree. Wouldn't that be wonderful? You know, we save some, you know, but I know that's not realistic. But, and I mean, I've even had people like, because I think this wouldn't anybody want to save the planet. But I did a talk a couple years ago where I was talking about that. And one lady was just totally opposing. I mean, she was like, if this earth comes in, I'm just going to go live on another planet. And I'm like, well, how are you really? Okay. Where are you going to get your groceries? Well, from, you know, the store, you know? So it's like, and so that there's simple things that we can do. And it's like, my invitation to people is start with an opportunity challenge that is possible. If you go to get your coffee every day, bring your own cup. Mm-hmm. If you, you know, get your own, back to the own lunchbox. So I'm not packaging my food. I sit down and eat in a restaurant that serves on real plates. I don't buy food that's put in containers. As our grocery stores start to package fruit in plastic, I write them a letter and I say, I cannot shop here anymore because I do not want to pollute the earth with this plastic. Yeah. And I'm okay if my apples are dented. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And the more that as people, individuals, we speak up, the more things will change. And, you know, it's just simple. And again, doing volunteer activities where some, like, I don't know if, you know, where we are here, we'll have a monthly, everybody goes and takes a walk and cleans up the beach or the sides of the roads and it's not just when we're doing that. And now here's the other opportunity. It's an energetic thing. So I do know that there's many people who do go into nature to pray and to ask for help and have resources, whether it's angels or whoever it is. But we have to also give back. So sometimes we take so much. We're like, oh, help me solve my, you know, give me guidance, give me this, give me that. But if we forget to go back and say, thank you. And I'm so grateful to you. And you tree, you forest, you water, you are so beautiful. We have to give this loving, kind energy back into nature. Otherwise, she's just going to rip us off the face of the earth.
I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, Arianna, because it was an aha moment to myself as well. The moment I realized that when I'm standing here hugging a tree and I'm beyond the point where I feel stupid and I'm just enjoying this moment and the meeting with the tree, I'm actually giving the tree something as well. Mm-hmm. It's both ways. And, you know, having been a city girl, it takes time to reach that point. But when you do, it's like a new world's opening to you.
Right? Yeah.
That's really amazing. So just to, you know, wrap this beautiful conversation up. You know, I would love to speak for another hour, but I'm very careful with your time as well, because I know you have your hands busy on your new ranch. But why don't you just share a little bit of what's going on in your business? If anyone here from Sweden has their ways in to California, what can they come to meet at your place?
Well, I live about an hour north of San Francisco, and I live in the Russian River Appalachian, which is a wine country, but I'm also in my watery roots at the beginning of the watershed of the estuary that goes to the sea. And I'm very close to the ocean still. And I go there several times a week myself. So we have a farm. We actually have a guest stay as well. And we actually have a beach cottage that is a place that people can stay on the beach. Yeah, it's amazing. It's a lifetime dream I've had. I just finally made it happen. I recently finished a book, which is a very personal journal, Ida, and it's very vulnerable, so I'm a little shy about it. But that just came on to Amazon. I have several other books available on Amazon as well. Like, there's one called The Horse Sense for the Leader Within, which is really what I've learned from horses about the way of being a leader in an embodied way, not by your title authority, but by who you are that compels others to kind of want to be and join you and inspire others. And then my new book is called The Water Calls, One Woman's Journey to Reclaim Her Dignity and Freedom.
Oh, wow. And
it's 16 years to write. And I also have poems in there and some of my illustrations, because I'm also an artist. Mm-hmm. And so that book is at the end of every chapter. It's actually written in the third person, as starting out as a girl, and how nature is her supporter and her teacher and her place to go to mend and heal. And so at the end of every chapter, there are what I call opportunities and contemplations. So the reader can do some of their own contemplations of the change points in their life, but also time in nature, like go be outside and go talk to a tree and have a tea party and things like that. So it's got that. And I may end up doing an online course about that down the road. So and dignity is to be acknowledged, to be seen, and dignity to the earth, and dignity to self, and dignity to others. You know, it's all of that. So we can give dignity to other people and maybe not giving it to ourselves. I think my story in a sense is that I was the only one that could really give myself dignity.
Wow. Yeah. That's a very important realization or insight.
And then I do a lot of medicinal plant stuff, which because we moved, I have to replant everything. But in my website, as I get my website developed, I will have more medicinal herbal information as well. And I do a blog, so I have my like inspirations, and which are always nature based.
And the address to your website, just so everyone.
Yeah, right now you could either find it on my name, Ariana Strozzi Mizuki, which is complicated, or Kasari Ranch, so which is C as in cat, A S as in Sam, A R I Ranch, so ranch.com. You could also do my name, Ariana Mizuki, MAZZUCCHI.com.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to put a link to there as well in my posts. But I want to make sure that our listeners can find you, because I'm sure that many of them have now got a ton of new ideas and a lot of inspiration on how to connect with nature. I'm so glad for that. And I'm going to read your book now, Ariana. I read the others, but this last one I didn't know about. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I look forward to hearing what you think about it.
So what's up for you now during this month of October? Where, you know, we're recording this in the end of September. I don't know, you guys, when you're listening, it might be later in the winter, but what's October going to be like for you?
This October, I'm going to be teaching my fall program in, so one class is a 3-day class. It's called Horses Healing Humans. Yeah. It's October 5 through 7. And then the next one is an equine guided coaching course. So I teach people how to incorporate horses into their offers, whether they're therapists or coaches or leaders or whoever. So it's, so October will be busy with, that from the 5th through the 21st. And if people want to find that information, they can look up my other website, which is skyhorseacademy.com. That's where all my horse programs are right now. And then after that, I'm going to take some time and go to the beach and, start working on my next book, and do some art projects. So I have all like a collection of essays from nature that I've been doing for a couple years. So I think it's pretty close, actually. I just need to bring them all together, and they're lessons and inspirations from nature. So much more whimsical book than my journal.
Oh, so. Looking forward to that one as well. Thank you for giving us a sneak peek on that. And thank you so much for joining us in this conversation, Ariana. It meant a lot to me, and I'm sure that our listeners are really heart touched by this as well. It's been wonderful to hear your thoughts on this. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ida. Thank you for having me.
And to all you listeners, we'll see each other again next Monday, as always. And keep an eye out also for our coming special episodes during this winter. Bye-bye.